reason that I'm here is because, you know, the club is seeking change.
He said, well, whether you come or not, you're going to see a completely different first team under me.
You know, my hope and my desire and what I'm going to try and do is give our supporters hope and belief that we're going to embark on something special.
Welcome into the Tottenham Depot. I am your host, Andrew. This is episode 171. You can follow me at Astetka. You can follow us at Tottenham Depot. Not a lot going on in the world of Tottenham Hotspur this week with the men on international break. The women did play this morning. We will get to that. Picked up another important 1-0 victory. We'll start by throwing it out to Scott. He is very excited that his Iowa Cyclones are headed to the Sweet 16. He's also at Scott G. Bird. Scott, what's going on, my friend?
Iowa State. Just to correct you there.
Did I say Iowa?
You did.
I've got Caitlin Clark on the brain. That's why. like we all do. Iowa State.
Honestly,
I Cyclones. I didn't say Hawkeyes. At least
you got that right. But no, as an Iowa State fan, I also have Caitlin Clark on the brain and the Iowa Hawkeyes. So yeah, I'll forgive you there. But no, big sports weekend for me. Obviously, the women's game this morning was fantastic. But Iowa State looks to be the real deal in the tournament, and last night, great victory, and tonight an international cup final to look forward to. So yeah, incredible sports weekend regardless of whether or not the men played.
We put cup final in the hardest of quotations in my book, but that's just my opinion. Sure. when it comes to U.S. men's national team games, we also have Caroline alongside, and I know that she is very confident that Hyung Min Sun could absolutely whoop Winston Churchill's ass. She's at CG Stefko. Caroline, what's going on with you?
Oh, I mean, I back Sunny in any situation. Let's just get that out of the way. But yeah, I'm okay. I've been sick this week, so still having a bit of lingering cold symptoms, as you can probably hear. But I'll do my best not to cough through this whole episode.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I've been battling it for about a week and a half now. Everyone, I think, seems to be going through something this spring, but it's going around for sure. If you have not checked us out on YouTube, we are once again on YouTube. Search for us there at Tottenham Depot, just like everywhere on the socials. You can check out the video of each podcast. We have started incorporating that into the pod, so check us out there as well. Guys, we just watched another 1-0 victory for Tottenham Hotspur women, this time over Bristol City. It was Beth England in the second minute. Just like last week when Spurs got a 1-0 victory over Leicester City with a goal in the second minute, they did the same bit this week, which I think is kind of wild. I wonder how many times that you've ever gotten consecutive 1-0 victories with the goal in the same minute from the same team. That's a little wild. But Scott, let's start with you, man. What was your takeaway from just a kind of another – this was – I thought a really solid win, one where Spurs dominated the possession, but just had a ton of chances and could only get the one goal.
Yeah, despite the scoreline, I thought it was a fairly comfortable win for the gals. As you said, Beth jumped on the score sheet really quickly, and I had put in the chat that, you know, Beth was reminding everybody what happens when she plays, right? Ball finds the back of the net. And not that I say that as if it's some dig at Robert for not starting her or anything like that, but I'm just stoked for Beth to score so early in the match. I thought Jess Naz was great, especially from the perspective of pressing and pinning, you know, Bristol City back when they were trying to get the ball out of their own half. She was instrumental there, but yeah, bit of a bird's eye view here, but it was a pretty comfortable win for me, regardless of the scoreline, for sure.
Let's stay on Bethan England, Caroline, because this was her first WSL goal of the season, which I had to be reminded of. Oh yeah, that's true. I mean, she has not been regularly starting matches. She's been coming in as a substitute, still, I think, trying to get that fitness back after all the injury woes in the first half of the season. But honestly, For her to be coming into some kind of form, and I thought she looked just incredible throughout this entire match, for her to be coming into form, putting a full 90 in the books ahead of a few weeks from now with that FA Cup semifinal against Leicester City and obviously the home stretch of the season, how important was this performance from her specifically to you going forward?
Well, I think the fact she was able to play the full 90 is a good shout, because we want her to be in that cup final. You know, she is our most efficient shooter. You know, that wasn't the strongest point of the team today overall, but I thought Beth did really well. And just to see, you know, her looking like her old self again, I think is really positive. And Robert had talked actually in the press conference before this game about how, even though she's not been playing as many minutes this season, you know, some of it in the first half of the season because she was recovering from surgery and, you know, now just sort of getting back into the flow of things. He just talked about how important she's been, even off the pitch, you know, with her leadership and contributing to the team, even when she's not actually playing. So I think it's clear that she's still, you know, one of our most important players. And, you know, she proved that today with her goal, which was just really well taken. You know, was able to dribble around a couple of defenders to get her shot off. And it's, to be fair to her, she did score some big goals in the cup. So it's not like this was her first goal of the season, literally, but it was important for her to finally get that first WSL goal of the season. And I think she's just going to kick on from here, honestly.
Yeah, that's certainly the hope. Scott made a great point about the press, and I thought that was the biggest difference. I jokingly kind of compared last week's match to this week's match, and I think the only difference for me is the opposition. I thought they were kind of similarly played matches overall, but I think Leicester is just a better level of opposition at this point in the season than Bristol City. Spurs were able to dominate a lot more of the ball. The press looked a lot stronger, especially though from that front three. And Scott, like I said, you alluded to it, Jess Naz, Beth England, and Celine Bizette too, like all of them were really, really on it, frontwardly pressing and allowed the midfield to do a job very easily. Possession was dominant. I think it was like 66%, 67% actually. 23 shots to 6 in favor of Spurs, 7-1 in terms of shots on target. So really, like, you see 1-0 and you're like, oh, and I jokingly in our group chat was like, oh, this feels kind of nervy, but I jumped the gun on it. It wasn't really nervy. It was a comfortable 1-0, but it still was like, you alluded to it, Caroline, like you would like to see a little bit more execution on the front end in terms of just the ball going in the net and actual goals being scored, even though, you know, I couldn't get any XG. I know Scott would like me to find some XG for this game, because unfortunately statistics in the women's game are just still not to the point that we need them to be. But I feel like the XG in this match would have been like well over 3 if I had to guess from Spurs, and they only got the 1 goal. So for me, that's, I think, the only downside to this. But what else stood out to you guys in terms of performances, either individually or as a unit? Because I thought overall this was just a really solid victory.
Honestly, the biggest thing I saw today was the passing patterns from a ball progression perspective were just on point. I mean, we're what, you know, over half a season into Bobby Ball, but it looks like the girls can progress the ball with their eyes closed at this point. It's fantastic. They know where everybody is. The patterns are just absolutely on point. The triangles never break, which is probably the most important thing when you talk ball progression, right, is keeping those triangles intact. So, yeah, I was just very impressed with what I saw today. Again, the 1-0 scoreline, whatever. 1-0, 4-0, 10-0, it's all 3 points, right? We dominated today. And I was just really happy to see – albeit against maybe somewhat of a weakened opponent, right? We can say that it is what it is, but the progress under Robert is really showing. And I think today was maybe the fulcrum of what I've seen so far with regard to those passing patterns. So really hopeful as we move forward, especially towards a massive, massive cup semifinal in the near future. I think for the women's team, top 4 is within a shout, right? I think we're 4 points off 4th place right now. And there's probably a game in hand if Liverpool hasn't played this weekend yet. I'm not quite sure, but I think we're 4 points off Liverpool and 3 points off United right now. So there's a lot to play for in the league, but that cup semifinal is everything as a fan for me right now, right? League plays whatever. It's important, but that cup semifinal is again, I'm going to say it again, it's everything for me right now as a fan. So as we progress to that cup final, I was just super happy to see how well our tactics were deployed today, is the best way to say it.
Yeah, I agree. I think the biggest difference between this game and the Leicester game was just that the passing was so much crisper. Mm-hmm. It makes a huge difference in that you actually get to see, you know, Robert's style of play, his tactics actually showing up. I felt like that was kind of missing in the last game. And it is true, like Andrew said, that, you know, Bristol are not at the same level as Leicester at this point. I think Leicester have improved quite a bit, especially this season. But it's still good that we were able to have that clear identity. And there were some times in this game where it almost took on the feel of like a training match, just because I think Bristol's hearts are not quite in it at this point. But they did make a push right at the end. And I feel like that was when we did get to see some of the, you know, defensive players get to shine. Luana Buhler, I think, deserves a little credit because she's had to come in with Molly Bartrett being out, you know, with her illness. And we were hoping she'd be back in the squad today. She didn't end up making it. But I think Luana has slotted right back in, even though she had very little game time in the middle stretch of the season. So I was happy to see her. She got a really important block in at one point. And this is two clean sheets in a row for Becky. So that feels great as well. And it just feels like the whole team is kind of coming into some form at the perfect time because, you know, we've got that semifinal coming up after this sort of extended international break. We were supposed to have had a game next weekend against Chelsea that got postponed because they're in the other cup final. Yeah. So we've got that extra week of training to think about Leicester. And then, you know, hopefully everyone comes back from international break unscathed and we can, you know, get to Wembley. It's like Scott said, it's all I'm kind of thinking about lately with this team.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is the main focus.
Yeah. Caroline pointed out the defense. I want to highlight, it was probably the 85th minute. I don't know, quite sure. And the name of the Bristol City winger escapes me. So I apologize, but they broke down the right and Amy James Turner made just an incredible run. The angle was absolute perfection and the shot ended up being kind of shanked into the side netting. Right. But the angle that Amy James Turner took allowed nothing else to happen. It kept baiting the player wide. She didn't go at the ball, but her angle gave the attacking player no other option other than to shank the ball into the side of the net. Right. It was, that kind of stuff excites me, that I've rarely seen such a perfect angle taken from a defender. Mickey Van de Ven is maybe the only other person I've seen it from this season. Right. But that had me geeking out from a defensive perspective. And then before I forget, I promised Caroline I'd mention this on the pod at the end of the game. Matilda ball rolled like 15 times in a row. And I had made the comment in the group chat that she had just out ball rolled Eric Lamela, which I've actually never seen a soccer player, man or woman, do ever. It was just a wonder to see. And it didn't amount to much, but anytime I see 10 ball rolls in a row and I think of Eric Lamela, I'm happy. So that was a nice way to close out the match for me as a fan.
Yeah, Coco, always in our hearts.
Always.
Here
always.
At the Depot. So I have a question for y'all that I thought of as Scott was talking. Who would you say has been our most improved player this season under Robert Villaham? Because I'll just say it's a leading question because really I feel like it might be Amy James Turner. You know, she was a player who last season frustrated me to no end. And I feel like she's really become an important player to this team. Not just because she's had more game time than we perhaps expected. I think going into the season, we all thought it was going to be Molly and Luana as the starting center backs, but she's really, you know, taken this starting role and ran with it. And it's not just the defensive improvement that we've seen, but I think also the fact that she's regularly getting involved in the attack as well. So I'm just curious if y'all had a different answer or if you're feeling like it's Amy.
I like the shout for Amy James Turner. My immediate thought went to Jess Naz because same. I feel like Jess Naz has like almost implemented herself as she has to be in the starting 11, whereas that wasn't always the case prior. She was coming in as a sub and a good sub, almost like a super sub, but now she's really entrenched herself out on the wing. And like we talked about earlier, the pressing, the ability to not just provide goal scoring opportunities and assists, but just even recycling the ball and providing outlets. I feel like she has really taken a leap as well. So Scott, did you have a different answer? Sorry, I didn't mean to steal yours.
No. I mean, I think Amy James Turner is a great shout. I wouldn't have any issues with that being the answer, but my head went to Jess as well. I think what I'm seeing from Jess Naz, albeit it's a front three, right? We all know in soccer tactics are whatever, right? A lot happens. There's a lot of interchange and movement these days, but I almost see Jess Naz as like a second striker off of Beth England today. And it allows Beth to poach and just stay in the box. That's what she's best at, right? Putting the ball in the back of the net. But Jess Naz stretches the defense so much and pulls so much pressure off of whoever the striker is, be it Beth England today, right? She works her socks off. And going from kind of a utility player to somebody who, like you said, can't be left out of the 11 at this point and needs to be up top, allowing that central striker to put the ball in the back of the net and poach is really important. So she's really stepped up in a way that said, you know, I'm a master of none to, I have to be in the 11 if you want to perform well today, Robert. And that just shows mentality. It's really hard as an athlete to be kind of pinned up against the wall from a playing time and a favoritism perspective from your manager and put it all on your back and say, I'm going to give you no choice other than and to put me in the 11. Right. So I'm really stoked for her. And I would have to say that my answer is Jess Naz off the top.
I still can't get over the fact that you called it Bobby Ball. I really appreciated that too. And I didn't.
I think I stole that from Caroline, honestly, at some point. Somebody said that at some point, so I won't take credit.
Maybe I missed it previously. I feel like it's the first time I've heard it called Bobby Ball, and I like the alliteration. I'm a sucker for that. You guys, we alluded to the FA Cup semifinal. That is in 3 weeks. Caroline, you said it. Like, it's a little bit of an extended break now, so a 3 week break before a game, which is very weird. April 14th at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So that's what's next on the horizon for Spurs women in terms of an actual game. So a big buildup to that. There were some other rearrangements of fixtures. That Chelsea match that you mentioned did get rearranged to the last week of the season, the Wednesday before the final match, which could also come days after a potential FA Cup final, which is a little awkward. There was another fixture change of note on the men's side, where the North London Derby on the men's side is going to now be played apparently on Sunday, April 28th, which is the same day as a women's game against Brighton. Really frustrating for those who want to attend both or even watch both. It becomes a little bit of a challenge. So the only way that kind of switches around is if Arsenal and Caroline, I'm going to get into it here. Arsenal, of course, play Bayern Munich in the Champions League. I believe that's the quarterfinal, correct? So if they were to advance past Bayern Munich, there is a potential that their semifinal matchup could be scheduled on the Tuesday, and then the match would be moved back to Saturday where it originally was. It's a whole thing, but fixtures being moved around this late in the season and trying to be arranged to get everything in before the summer is becoming a little bit of a nuisance. So I don't know if you guys had anything you wanted to get off your chest about any of that, but I think I just laid it out, and it's annoying. It's frustrating. We still don't really know when the men are playing against Chelsea, I guess, or Manchester City for that matter. All kinds of matches are just getting pushed and pushed, and it's a whole lot of frustration going on right now.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say is it's a lot of information for my brain to keep up with. But
mine too. I didn't even know about the women's Chelsea match being moved until Caroline told us right before we went live here. So it's a lot.
Fair, but I will say, you know, that's one of the benefits of being stateside is all you need is a computer screen or some second TV or whatever it is, and you're fine, right? So we're not dealing with the logistics that come with this type of stuff as much as those, you know, across the pond in the United Kingdom. So my heart goes out to the people who are really impacted by all those fixture changes. And worst case scenario for me is I'm on the couch with a laptop on my lap and, you know, another match on the TV. So.
Yeah. I just think the worst part of this situation is that, you know, we never like for there to be a fixture clash, but if it's just too kind of whatever games, you know, it's not a huge deal. Like, the fans who are actually there in London can choose which game they want to go to. But let's be honest, the men's North London Derby at home, we all know that people are going to want to go to that game. And unfortunately, in the situation, the women's team is going to get the short shrift with the attendance, which already is not great at Brisbane Road, let's be real. So it's just very frustrating. And there's got to be something that the FA can do to plan this better. And because, you know, there are teams in the WSL who play at their club's main stadium all the time. And, you know, they find a way to make it work. So I'm not really sure what the issue is with doing it for the rest of the teams. And I don't know. I won't get into the whole Byron of it, but it's a very difficult situation for me to handle personally, too.
To your point, don't Arsenal's women also play that Sunday, and they regularly play at the Emirates? Like, what?
Right. So they're also getting screwed over by this decision. Yeah, good point.
I mean, not that I want to have sympathy for Arsenal fans, but I have a little bit of sympathy for Arsenal fans in this sense, because everyone's getting the shaft here, and it genuinely sucks. So let's move on to some other topics before we get out of here. It's going to be a fairly short pod today. Just like I said, there's one game and just a few other kind of news and notes topics. Manor Solomon underwent a second surgery this week on his right knee to repair some meniscus damage. Kind of unknown what the plan is for Manor Solomon in the future. And I know there's, like, he's only played, I've got it pulled up here, 5 matches for Spurs, has not played since September 30th against Liverpool. It's a little bit of an awkward one. You know, it was awkward when Spurs acquired Manor Solomon and in the way that they did. And now there's a thought that maybe, like, nobody's really sure whether or not he fits into this system that Ange Postecoglou is running, and whether or not he is a long-term option, whether or not Spurs will try to flip him for a small profit this summer. I hate even putting it that way, but that's just the economics of football. And I don't know. I'm not really sure where I stand on this. It's very much a kind of wait and see mode. But Scott, where are you with Manor Solomon? And obviously, it's been a frustrating season just with a long-term persistent injury for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't love the way in which we acquired his services, right? Get that out of the way. But honestly, like, is it horrible to say I've kind of resorted to the idea that he maybe never just fits into Spurs going forward altogether? I think as we continue to strengthen the squad, let's say hypothetically Werner comes in on a permanent deal. I can't imagine we're not bringing in some winger this summer, right? I don't really see a future for Manor Solomon as Spurs. And, you know, it's probably best for him if that happens too. I don't see, even if he's around the squad, him getting many minutes in this setup, right? Especially with the way that Johnson's been playing effectively as a substitute, especially, right? Which would be Manor Solomon's most likely scenario if he's going to get minutes. So yeah, it's kind of a weird deal from, like I said, from the way that we acquired him, as you said, the way that we acquired him wasn't great through the fact that he hasn't played at all. Yeah, it's probably just best if we all move on from this little experiment, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think he is sort of becoming surplus to requirements just because we have so many players who can play at that left wing position. And I don't think he's, you know, going to climb up in the pecking order, even if he does come back from his injury by the end of this season. So yeah, it's like you said, it's unfortunate kind of the way that he even came to the club. And I know Shakhtar Donetsk are still sort of raising some concerns about that. And that's not ideal either, but it just feels like the bigger need for the squad building is that right wing position. So I would not be surprised if he was moved on at the end of the season.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't either. It has shades of like Carlos Vinicius to it. Like, we tried, but it's just not going to work out. Like from an on-field standpoint, not obviously from an injury standpoint. Honestly, from an injury standpoint, it has unfortunate shades of like Ryan Sessegnon to it, where it's just like a persistent thing that keeps coming up. So it stinks, but we'll kind of have to see how it plays out. As you said, like if he gets back by the end of the season, it doesn't sound like that's quite feasible unless there's some kind of miraculous recovery, of which we have weirdly seen many this season for Spurs. We have seen a lot of players come back early, but I don't know that there's any reason to rush it, especially like Scott mentioned, when you've got Timo Werner and other options to play on the outside at this point. So we'll have to see. Speaking of the end of the season, the other thing that was announced this week for Spurs is that they are headed back to Australia after the season to play a friendly. And they're going to play this at the Melbourne Cricket Ground against Newcastle. It's on May 22nd, which is 3 days after the end of the season. When I saw this, I thought to myself, why the hell are they doing this? And of course, in life, as is a custom, when we ask why, most of the time the answer to the question is money. And that is the reason. It's money. It's a money-making opportunity for the club to go travel, play this game. Obviously, it's a money-making opportunity for Newcastle as well to feature some of their players on an international stage. We've seen Spurs do this in the preseason a lot. We haven't seen them do a ton of it in the postseason in recent years. And it's especially awkward because there is, of course, a lot of international competition this summer between the Euros, Copa America. There will be a number of players, you know, with a little bit of downtime between the end of the season and the start of these big international tournaments. So it led Gareth Southgate, the England manager, to kind of come out and bemoan financial fair play. He just basically blamed this on FFP and said, you know, clubs are going to have to do this to make ends meet and it sucks. But, you know, he's obviously got a number of players that are going to be impacted just by this game alone. James Maddison, you know, notwithstanding others. So I don't know. This feels, I won't say gross, but it feels like on the verge of gross to me. It's just a money-making opportunity. And that's kind of all it is. It's the only reason to do this. I'll be really curious as to how many first team players actually go travel and play in this game 3 days after the season ends. Especially in a season where, if you ask me, I think scratching and clawing for that fourth or fifth position could be really important going down to the final day of the season. So I don't know, Scott, what's your take on Spurs' decision to do this? I'm a little weirded out by it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with anything you're saying from a, you know, financial point of view as to why this is happening. The only thing I would add is I do think it's a pretty awesome opportunity for a couple things. One, for the club to parade its Australian manager around Australia, right, and continue to grow the fan base. I'm happy with fans jumping on board from any corner of the planet, right? Regardless of maybe what some folks in London feel. Do I say that? But I am happy with us.
Yeah. And by the way, you can check out episodes 170 and 169 of the Tottenham Depot for more conversation more, about that. We've talked about that in recent weeks for sure.
Yeah. So I'm happy from that perspective that it's, and it's nice for Ange to go home, right? And manage the team that he seems to really love back home. The other thing I think is cool, the other reason I think it's cool is there's an opportunity for some of the U21 players to travel with Tottenham and play for the first team. Because like you said, you had asked how many first team players go. Zero, maybe. Probably not zero, but a small number, right? If I'm Heung-min Son, if I'm Richarlison, if I'm, you know, Eve Bissouma, the list goes on. The last thing I want to do after we hypothetically, hopefully, grind out a third or fourth place finish, right, is hop on a plane to Australia. But for guys like Santiago, for guys like Langshire, Donnelly, Dane Scarlett, Soonsop Bell, I think it's a really neat opportunity to go show the manager what you've done all season and what you've learned all season, because we know the U21s are playing the same system that the first team plays. Thank God it took us how many years of neglect to get to that point, right? But we're there now, and I'm stoked for those guys to, again, get a chance to show Ange Postecoglou what they can do against another Premier League side. So there's some positives to take away from it. But like you said, I'll never try to skirt around the idea that this is all financially motivated. So.
Well, and I think the thing that really is kind of rankling a lot of folks is that it's a friendly against another Premier League team. Because, you know, I like, in theory and in general, I am in support of these kind of international tours in the summer. They should be happening later in the summer, not right after the season, in my opinion. But it, you know, it is good to connect with the other fan bases. It's just ideally you would like to see that happening with, you know, friendlies against local teams, like kind of expanding kind of the different styles of play that we can, you know, play against and help those local teams, you know, also from their financial perspective, like it's a big opportunity for them. And it just kind of feels like, why did this friendly have to take place in Australia where we were just at last summer? I think from that perspective, like the carbon footprint doesn't look good, especially. So it kind of is what it is. Like, you know, we're not the only club doing this, as we've seen, but I think it's been kind of roundly criticized by all the clubs that are doing it, because players do need a rest too. Like that's really the big thing. The football calendar is not slowing down. It seems like there are no breaks anymore, honestly, for players who are at the top level playing with their national teams. So I just feel very kind of sad for them, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, that's my biggest issue with it, is in a summer where we're going to have, I know, at least two major international competitions with Euros and Copa America. I mean, you're talking about obviously pretty much all of the European players on the team, which is a lot of them. And then you're even talking about the Argentinian contingent in terms of both Romero and Lo Celso, who, by the way, both scored on international duty this week, which was cool to see. But like there's just a lot going on at the moment. And, you know, I'm in favor of these matches too. I mean, hell, I think it was 2018. Spurs came out here to the States. I got to see them at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California, which was friggin' awesome. They played Barcelona, but it was also like Spurs B-minus C-plus squad because it was a World Cup summer. So there weren't a lot of, you know, there was no Harry Kane, Heung-min Son. You know, there were no big names there. And I'm fine with that. Like it's okay to send over some younger players. You at least get to see the team, even though it's not the team. But this, it feels like a lot. And to your point, we're asking players to play a lot of games all the time, year round. And football hasn't always been a year round game. There always has been a break. And nowadays, because of, again, and money, we're not really allowing for that, which is kind of frustrating. But that's the world that we unfortunately do occupy. So we have to kind of go forward with that. Before we get out of here, guys, just want to like do a brief look ahead to Luton next week. Spurs men taking on Luton Town at home. This was a really weird game the last time out. Of course, they took the trip to Kenilworth Road and won 1-0 despite going down a man just before halftime. That was the game where Ibasuma was sent off on a second yellow for diving. And then Mickey van de Ven came out shortly after halftime and scored, and Spurs held on despite being down a man to win 1-0. Since then, Luton have had a weird season. Let's just put it that way. They are currently 1 point clear of the relegation zone, but only because Nottingham Forest were just docked 4 points. So they have fallen back below them. But Luton have not won a game since January 30th. And that was a 4-0 victory over Brighton. They have 6 losses and 3 draws in that span, including a loss to Manchester City in the FA Cup. So they haven't been having the best of it, obviously. It feels like it's Luton at home. It should be a walk. But as we know, it's also Spurs, so it's not going to be a walk. We still don't really have an update on Mickey van de Ven's status for this game. Of course, the goal scorer from the reverse fixture. But we could see Radu Dragosin get a second consecutive start at left center back. We talked ad nauseum about his performance against Fulham last time out, but how confident could we possibly be going into a home match against Luton coming off of an international break, Scott? Like, I don't know where you are, but I'm like, who knows?
Yeah. I mean, after that match against Fulham, I don't know what to expect. That was just a torrid performance. We were absolutely lost in that match, right? So we'll see. I think this game is massively important. It really, really is. We're coming down to the home stretch of the season. It's tough. Legs are tired. Minds are tired. I feel that if we don't go get a result, and it doesn't even have to be a resounding performance, but if we don't go get a result in this game, I'm going to start to question if we're starting to falter a little bit, right? And I think we all knew coming into this season that Ange's historical first year isn't always great, right? It started off just swimmingly as can be, right? And I think we were all taken aback by what we had seen. And so, again, if we don't get a result, I start to wonder if that first season, hoodoo or whatever we want to call it, is catching up with the club a little bit. No reason to panic if it happens, right? I think the tenure under Ange is going to be very bright, but I do think this match has massive implications for how we mentally prepare for the rest of the season. We need to go out and take it to Luton. And again, 1-0 is fine. We talked about it in the women's result this morning, right? I don't care what the scoreline is, but we need to go play really good football against Luton. I really think it speaks volumes to what the rest of the season looks like.
Yeah. And I do think we're going to see a response, from that Fulham game. The problem is Luton are also extremely motivated at the moment because they've gotten that break of, Nottingham Forest's points deduction. And it's not like they've been a terrible team, honestly. Like, there have been some games where they've actually played really well and probably deserved points. And just, it's the Premier League. It's the hardest league to get points in. But I don't like the idea of coming into this game where they really have something to play for. And, coming off international break, hopefully we'll be fit. But I think it will be a big boost if Mickey is able to start, not just because he scored against them the last time out, which was kind of funny. But I just think it might be good for Radu to not have to start again after a tough performance, which, again, I wasn't on the pod last week, but I really think it's not fair to blame him. Not that y'all did, but it was just a bad performance from the whole team. But I just think he could probably use the mental break of being on the bench for this next one.
I mean, the other thing to think about in that sense is that, and I didn't realize this until I just glanced at the schedule, Spurs play Saturday at home against Luton and then have to turn around and play again Tuesday, a trip to West Ham. So maybe I don't know if I'm playing devil's advocate to what you're saying about Radu Dragosin. Maybe you do start him in this match at home, get the fans behind him, get him a good performance under his belt, and save Mickey van de Ven for that Tuesday match, a trip to West Ham, which could prove to be perhaps a little bit more challenging going on the road to a London rival, and get van de Ven back in that match. Who knows? We'll have to see what the health status is of van de Ven. It is kind of an interesting turnaround, Saturday to Tuesday, and then the Spurs don't play again until the following Monday on April 8th. So it's a little bit of, again, weird fixture list coming up for everyone. We're heading into the spring. We're trying to get all the matches in before everyone's season ends. So that's just kind of how it works at this time of season. That's going to do it for us here at the Depot. You can follow Caroline at CG Stefko. You can follow Scott at Scott G Bird. Follow me at Astetka. More importantly, follow us at Tottenham Depot on all of your social media platforms. You can also find us on YouTube once again. If you haven't been checking us out there, we're starting to stream the pods live. You can watch us live, comment live, comment afterwards, like, subscribe, share it with your friends, spread the word. We will be back with you next weekend following that match against Luton. Until then, this has been the Tottenham Depot podcast. As always, come on, you Spurs.